welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. Today in the show, we're going to talk a little about spring manure applications. We would also be happy to answer your questions. If you would like to call in, the number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on X, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so spring manure, I just have a couple things on that, and then we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag here. But the number one thing that I want you to keep in mind always is salt content with manure. And when you are close to when you are going to plant, you have to be much more careful about that salt load. So last year, for example, we had a couple of fields that were fairly heavy soil even, so I didn't think we were going to have a whole lot of problem. The rate that got applied got pushed a little bit, and then it certainly was worse where, let's just say, it got splashed around the ends and doubled up to some degree, and all of a sudden, we had an issue in our corn. Cost us probably 50 bushels. That's not good. We can't have that kind of stuff. Now, granted, in the grand scheme of things, we're fine. We farmed 3,500 crop acres, so I had a couple fields that weren't what they should have been. It's not the end of the world. It's a good learning experience. I didn't want to push it that much. We're just trying to help somebody out to get rid of some spring manure, and then the rate got a little excessive, and the application, like I say, where they doubled up, that's where we had the real problem. So anyway, it's not a complete disaster. We're still here another year. But in the future, I just have said two things. Number one, if at all possible, we don't want to do spring manure. I want to do it in the fall. But number two, if you need to do spring manure, you certainly can. There's nothing wrong with it necessarily. It's just the ground's got to be dry, and you don't want to get too much salt out there. The problem is, Darren and I look at soil tests, and we look at, quite often, manure or compost tests here too, and we don't see salt. A lot of soil tests don't have it, and a lot of soil tests also, in addition to not having salt on there, they don't have sodium on there. And then in a lot of the manure tests, it doesn't tell you how much salt there is either. Well, if you don't know how much salt there is, and what I'm telling you is that's the number one factor before you determine the rate you're going to apply, how are we doing it? Well, most people will say, well, I'm getting enough manure on to meet my nitrogen needs or to hit the phosphorus level in my manure management plan. Look, I don't get to either one of those two. I can't put on enough manure for all my nitrogen needs. I can't put on enough manure to meet even all my phosphorus needs. And you might go, what? Yes, it's true. We're using dairy manure, and we can't put on enough, because otherwise we hit our limit on salt. So what are we shooting for salt? 500 pounds per acre per year is what Midwest Labs says when you get 25 inches of rain or more. Well, we don't get that. So will we push it to 500 pounds in the fall? Sure we will. In the spring, no possible chance. 300, that's probably about it. But the more rain you have and the heavier your soil, the less problem you're going to have. We've done some higher rates of manure in the last couple of years on real heavy ground, especially like in river bottom ground that's got, we'll call it subsurface irrigation, because the water table ends up getting a little on the high side sometimes, and through capillary action, we get water up to our plants. We haven't had a problem. I don't want to push it any more than we have, but I'm just saying, I don't know if you're going to get rain, and I don't know what soil type you're going on. So just please be careful when it comes to salt, especially if you are applying manure in the spring. Well, we'll talk more about manure later in the show, but right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
First question comes from Harold. He said, hey, Brian and Darren, I have a startup row crop operation, and thanks to you guys, I bought into the power of grid soil sampling. I'm just curious, are there any low-cost apps that allow me to map my field and locate samples for input needs? I've looked at a few, but they seem clunky and unsupported, while others seem pricey and connected to a dedicated input supplier.
Yeah. So the one we're using, it's called Verify. That's V-R-A-F-Y. And so V-R-A-F-Y, Verify. And there are different levels to it. So one of the things that I like is without even the sampling, we can just replace what we've removed, because it can take your yield maps and turn that into a variable rate application map. That's awesome if you don't want a soil test, and that's cheap. But yeah, there are other levels too, and you can do mapping and all this kind of stuff. We've worked with several different software programs over the years. This is easily the best one we found yet.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this one from Bob. He said, is there anything to control broom sedge in pastures? I'm down in northeast Oklahoma. Hey, Bob, it's an interesting question, and this is one that I think is kind of a fun answer too. Because, yeah, I mean, you could obviously take Roundup in a weed wiper, brush across the top. I'd go both directions, and you could kill it with a herbicide. But outside of that, there really isn't a good herbicide to kill it in pasture grass. But here's the big thing, and Brian, you're going to love this one. If you have lime and phosphorus to correct soil issues, you can eliminate broom sedge. So the recommendations, I was just looking at North Carolina State, they recommend keeping your P1 at 50 parts per million or above in your pasture and keeping your pH between 6 and 7. If you do that, you don't have broom sedge. If you get outside of that, if your pH gets too low, you have broom sedge. Or if your phosphorus drops below 50 parts per million, you have broom sedge. So keeping that soil fertility in balance, taking soil samples in your pasture, making sure you're keeping fertility up, helps create healthy forage to choke out broom sedge. It really works. So that was kind of interesting. Their recommendation is no herbicides, just phosphorus and lime to fix whatever issue you got in your soil. Now, your soil may have different issues in northeast Oklahoma than that, but take a good soil sample, see what's going on. The other thing they recommend, and this is from a different university, they've had really good success timely cutting. They start off like in mid-July once the brown seed heads form and cut it, and then they do it again in the early fall, like early September, and they found it weakens the plant, and over a few years, they can greatly reduce the amount of broom sedge out there, but the soil fertility issues are the biggest one. So take a good soil sample. Listening to Ag PhD Radio, our phone lines are open to take your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. And we'll be talking about spring manure applications coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/basic.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's V-R-A-F-Y.com.
Farmer Amaranth. Four counts of yield theft, resistance to groups 2, 4, 9.
You ain't got nothing on me, man.
We've been surveilling you. And now we've got Tough 5EC, a tank mix partner that'll make sure you and your gang of resistant weeds never see the daylight again.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belsham Crop Protection.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio talking about spring manure application. There's already been some manure application done in our area this spring, but in your area, you might just be getting going on this. So we want to talk about some of the considerations for spring manure. I got a friend, Temple Rhodes, with us right now. He works with the Extreme Ag Group and farms out in the state of Maryland. Temple, I can imagine when you're putting manure on in the state of Maryland, people are watching and making sure you're following the rules.
Yeah, well, I mean, luckily enough, you know, with our nutrient management plan, you know, we can put on manure and we can put on a decent amount of manure. We just have to watch the way that we put it on. And there's certain farms and certain fields that we can put it on. There's certain ones that we can't.
So what are the big rules or directions that you have to follow to do things right in your state?
They really want you to, you know, incorporate it at some point, you know, within 24 hours. That's kind of a big deal. And if you can do that, I mean, it's good for us as well as farmers, you know, because you're trying to get it incorporated in the dirt within 24 hours. You're trying to save whatever nitrogen's out there that you can get, you know, that's in the material. So it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a little bit of a rush thing. You know, if you got litter spreaders running, as far as like poultry manure out here, you got, you know, they're out there running, you're trying to load and run them, and then you're trying to chase them back in. And not everybody puts them in, but it's a good thing if we do that. We can get a lot more value out of it. But some farms, like, you know, if you have over a certain PPM as far as phosphorus goes on certain soil types, you can't even apply manure on those farms. We won't even be able to apply it. So you got to pick and choose where it goes.
You know, one of the things that I know you work really hard on, Temple, is managing nutrients to try to produce the best crops that you can. And if we're raising big yields out there, we're pulling a lot of that fertility back out of the soil. It's got to be a nice balance when you want to apply a decent amount of manure. If you can remove those nutrients too, your risks of having any problems out there are pretty low.
Well, you know, we talk about that all the time, you know, but when you raise a really big crop, you know, you have a lot that's, you know, that remains in the stover. You have a lot of N, P, and K that's in it. Now we're going to lose the N in it, but we're going to gain the P and the K back out of that stover if we can break it back down and we can get it back into the next crop. So we do a lot of that, and there is a lot of crop removal. But here's one of the problems that, you know, one of the arguments that I would have for as a farmer in my area. So if our PPMs, or let's just say above 150 PPMs on a certain soil type in a certain watershed that's close to, you know, a tributary, we can't apply any more phosphorus on that. We couldn't put any manure on it. We couldn't do anything. Well, that, even though you have a high PPM, it's locked up in the soil and you can't get it back out of the soil. So we're finding that it's pretty hard to remove P if you can't produce it and you have a plant that's deficient in it. So you have to be able to get around that by maybe applying something else, like a fertilizer efficiency agent of some sort, or going out there and applying some foliar feed of, you know, even though it's high in phosphorus, you're going to need phosphorus foliar to get that plant to grow and be able to uptake some of the phosphorus out of the ground. And then if you can't get it into the plant, we can't get it out of the soil.
Yep, great points. We're talking with Temple Rhodes here, farms out in the state of Maryland and works with the Extreme Ag Group. Temple, thank you so much. I know it's a busy time of year, but really appreciate all the insight.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
You bet. Real happy to have Glenn Arnold with us. Works with Ohio State University and spring manure. Glenn, I bet you're getting a lot of questions right now.
Yeah, we do. Well, we've had actually a pretty good start to spring. Up until the last 2 days, we've had some tremendous thunderstorms going across the state. But up until the last couple of days, we've had a really nice window for some spring manure application.
You know, Temple was talking about the importance of getting it incorporated into the soil within 24 hours, just to be a good neighbor, but also to prevent runoff. You mentioned the thunderstorms. If a guy got manure on, got it worked in, now he got some rain, you can't really envision much better environment than that.
Right, right. Then you'll have that ready for the corn crop when the corn crop gets in the ground in about a month. So, a lot of our guys will, it all depends on their stage of evolution, but a lot of our larger commercial manure applicators like to knife it in when they put it on. It's a little slower, but if you can get that down in the ground, then you're not going to have the complaints, the calls at 2 o'clock in the morning, things like that from people. So they like to just go ahead and get it in the ground if they possibly can.
Do you worry about anything by putting manure out in the spring compared to putting it out in the fall?
just soil compaction is your number one. You know, if you're using tankers, most of our soils have a lot of clay, so we're hesitant to put it down a lot. Now, that's why many have gone to drag hoses. We have a lot of drag hose folks in the state of Ohio. And then the other thing they'll use manure on this time of year is we do a lot of top dressing of wheat with swine manure. So they'll go out there with, oh, probably 4,000 gallons per acre of swine finishing manure, and they'll top dress wheat. Some of them will use some sow gestation manure, and they'll have real good wheat yields because they got that manure on real good shape. It was able to sit in the field for several days, and then a little bit of light rain was able to get her down into the root system pretty quickly this year.
You know, it sounds to me a little bit like cover crops. And we talked about this in the fall, just how guys are utilizing cover crops to suck in some of those nutrients and hold them for a little while. Mm-hmm. Is it kind of a similar concept?
Yep, similar. It's just the fact that you do not have to put any other top dress fertilizer on that field. So, you know, the cost of having a commercial person come in and top dress that field of corn or of wheat is actually going to be less than it would have cost to buy that nitrogen, whether it be 28% or urea. So it's really been a win-win. And of course, many guys have spent the whole winter accumulating manure in their pits and places like that. So it's always good to get those things down a little bit every chance you get.
You've been doing this for quite a while, Glenn, and we love talking to you with all the wealth of information that you got on manure applications. What are some of the studies you have going right now? What are some of the new practices farmers are doing that you're really interested in learning more about in terms of manure application?
Well, the National Pork Board has got us in on a research project where we're going to, for 5 years, we're going to plant corn in a field and we're going to side dress with manure. And in that 5 years, you know, based on our manure samples, we're going to balance for P2O5. And we want to see, or they want to see, what the effect is on soil health. So we've got some manured versus non-manured strips. We pulled our soil samples last fall. So for the next 5 years, we intend to do these manure strips as part of a research project with the National Pork Board. And then another plot we've got out is some poultry litter. We're trying to figure out better ways to use poultry litter in Ohio. So we've got some where we put some out on wheat in the spring just to see if we could back off on our commercial fertilizer purchases.
Very interesting. Yeah, love it. Love all the work going on. Thank you so much for all the work that you're doing, Glenn. We really appreciate it. Again, we're talking with Glenn Arnold here with Ohio State. Good luck this spring. Really appreciate it.
Hey, it's always great to talk to you guys. I love to listen to your podcasts and stuff. Always enjoy that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Glenn. We really appreciate it. Get a question here from Joseph in Indiana about chlorine. How you doing, Joseph?
Getting close to things. Yeah, can you hear me?
You bet.
Yeah, hey, I have got a question for you on treating some seed.
Okay.
So I have my yield seed treater, and we were going to get ready to get started treating some soybeans and some corn, probably some soybeans for sure today. And so we, at our shop where we're treating our beans, our water is city water, and it's chlorinated.
Okay.
And we're running a lot of things like Hyton for sure on our soybeans. And I didn't know what your thoughts were on the chlorinated water and running like biological products. Obviously, I think that's a no-no, right?
Yeah, yeah. It sure can kill the biology, no doubt
it
about
it. It will
that.
Kill the biology. Yeah, that's the problem. So what you want to do is just turn that chlorine into chloride. It costs literally a few cents is all. It's no big deal.
And there's no byproduct.
The product that we use, it's called BioPrep, and it's super cheap, no big deal. You just convert the chlorine over to chloride. Now it won't kill those beneficials.
Otherwise, your choice is distilled water.
Gotcha. Okay. And then,
Oh, hang on here, Joseph. We're up against a commercial break. We'll get to the rest of your question here right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at soilwarrior.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out caseih.com.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hard-working Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition and field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hard-working control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Just before the break, we were talking with Joseph in Indiana about treating some soybean seed and dealing with chlorinated water. All right, Joseph, you had another question for us too before we ran into that break.
Yeah, we added Infurl to the corn planter this year. Main reason is wireworms on sand early. We're going to use some capture. Is 3 gallon to the acre on 30-inch rows adequate for that?
Yeah, it's going to be fine, but here's the thing. We really like that new foaming system that FMC has come out with. We have seen better results with the Zyway in the foaming versus just the regular LFR version liquid, kind of like you're talking about running like 3 gallons, because you get a little bit better coverage. The challenge with any of these Infurl systems, it's and how even is the spread? Very often what we find is it spits. So it throws a little out and then it stops, throws a little out, that stops. And that's the way it goes. And so I know it's nice hauling less stuff because you are able to plant more acres in a day. But if you can even bump it up to 5 gallons, throw a couple gallons of water with it or whatever, then it helps give you a little bit better spread. Not nearly okay. As big a deal with the insecticide as it is with the fungicide, but I'm just saying that could potentially help your efficacy just slightly. It's probably not a big deal. I'm just throwing it out there for everybody listening today. Just something for you to always be thinking about.
Okay. Have you had any experience or tried the Tripera Plus Infurl?
Yes. Yep. And it's fine. Basically, the Tripera Plus, you're adding a fungicide also. So where we've seen the best gains is when you're planting early into cold soils.
Yep, yep. And if you had any experience with the StartRight 2.0 in furrow?
StartRight. That one I'm not familiar with. What is that?
It's an ag biologic product. It's a seaweed extract with some zinc and a few other trace minerals in it.
Sure. The challenge with a lot of the seaweed products is just consistency of that product from, let's say, batch to batch. So is it possible that could give you a return? Sure. We've talked to plenty of people that have gotten returns from seaweed extract products, but then also, of course, we run into people that say, no, we're not seeing anything, and I believe that's part of the reason why. It's just a little bit inconsistent. Whereas, for example, if you buy a jug of whatever, Roundup, you know in every jug there's the same percentage of glyphosate in it. I always question that with a lot of the seaweed extract products. But anyway, I'd say if it's something you think is going to help you, try it and just see how it goes and go from there.
Yep. Appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, Darren, let's get back to Ag PhD mailbag questions. I see you have a bunch over there.
All right. I got this one in from... from Will, said, if you make a late season pass, couldn't you use Volunteer? I agree with getting more crop canopy and possibly recommend using cover crop residue.
Stop. Go back. I didn't follow that. If you make a late season pass, what?
Couldn't you use the product Volunteer?
Oh, the product Volunteer.
I agree. Getting more canopy and possibly would recommend even using cover crop residue to help, but Volunteer should work in an extra pass, shouldn't it?
What are we talking about here?
I don't know what he's referring to, Brian. This just came in online, and that's the only question that it was. So I'm assuming late season residual weed control and certainly—
Wait, residual weed control? Volunteer, isn't that just clethodim? Isn't Volunteer herbicide clethodim? Boy, we're making great radio here. This is one of our best shows yet, Darren.
I was thinking that was the generic acetichlor, but that's different. That's Volley. Yeah, you're right. Volunteer, I think, is clethodim. So, okay. So let's try and reframe that. If you make a late season pass, could you add Volunteer? Well, of course you could. Clethodim is often used in that later season pass, depending on what the crop rotational or pre-harvest interval is on that.
Okay, yeah, we're going to leave. Yeah, so you just have to look at the label and see. So if you've got more of a specific question, Will, was it? Just send that to us. No problem.
All right, in the meantime, we'll continue discussion on spring manure. Get Brennan with us, farms over in the state of Minnesota. Brennan, how you doing?
Good. Brian, Darren, how are we doing today?
Well, we're doing pretty good. We did some spring manure last year on the farm. We didn't do it this year. We had a great fall. We got everything done in the fall. And honestly, we kind of prefer it that way just to avoid compaction issues and other challenges that can happen. You just never know what you're going to get for weather in the spring. How about on your farm? Do you guys like to do stuff in the fall, like to do it in the spring, or a little mix of both?
We would love to do it all in the fall, but we just we run into problems. If we don't do it in the spring, we run into problems that, you know, at the middle of September, it's getting a little tight, in our pit space. So, you know, it's either find a neighbor with sweet corn or something, or we do it ourselves in the spring, which we had pretty good luck with it last year, but, we've also had some failures with spring manure.
How about side dress? We were talking to Glenn Arnold over at Ohio State. They're doing a study right now at the National Pork Board on side dressing corn with manure. Have you guys done any of that?
We haven't. That is something that we would be very interested in, but just, you know, with the, you know, the limitations with equipment and, you know, where fields are and stuff, that's kind of where we're at. But I see that as the future, you know, and it's just logistically and equipment wise, you know, we'll get there someday, I think. But right now we're kind of confined to the having to spread some in the spring.
What a blessing to have livestock and have manure that you can use on your own crops. What do you find is the limiting factor for you where you're at in Minnesota? Is it the amount of nitrogen in the manure? Is it salt? Is it phosphorus? What kind of determines the maximum use rates?
The maximum use rate is, just the ability to get over everything, I think, is the, you know, maximum use rate. And you don't want to throw down 6,000 gallons an acre, and then I don't feel you're utilizing it as well. So we're hog finishing manure, we're typically around 4,500, maybe 5,000 gallons, you know, so we can cover as much acres, so we're not calling the, you know, commercial fertilizer guy near as much.
Sure, sure. Yeah, commercial fertilizer, not free. So I certainly get that point.
No, well, neither is manure, but, you know, you got to look at it as almost a commodity. It's almost, you know, it's not a waste product like I think maybe previous generations may have looked at it. You know, it's something that you can definitely use. We've always said it's like it wakes a farm up when you put manure on it, kind of unlocks some things almost.
Now, with manure on your farm, is it always done ahead of corn, or do you do some manure in front of soybeans too?
If it gets late, we always try to do it in front of corn, just for the nitrogen credits. We have done it in front of beans if, you know, it's getting to be the middle of May and we still haven't pumped our manure. And then, because, you know, spring manure works in my mind if you can get out there early and you can get it applied. And then you got to give that, you know, you pray for some warm weather and some dry weather, and then you just got to let it lay there for a week, in my mind. And, you know, sometimes in the middle of May, you don't always have that luxury. You got to get going. So if we do spring manure on manure, it's probably because we're running out of time, and, you know, June 1st is a couple weeks away.
Sure, sure. Well, with the hog operation, you definitely have a need for corn. What are you seeing for acres in your area this year, and what are you kind of planning on your farm? Are you staying steady with your corn and bean rotation, or are you shifting to more of one or the other?
I would say we're probably 10% corn on corn. 10% of our corn will be corn on corn, if that makes any sense. So,
sure.
Yeah, we're doing more corn on corn, and just based on profitability this year, beans aren't, you know, that friendly, and, you know, when you plug them into a spreadsheet. So, you know, hey, if there's a field that struggles to grow beans anyways, you know, why not do corn on corn? And with that spring manure, that kind of lets us.
Makes it more economical.
Let's do it a little bit more. Yeah, exactly.
You bet. Well, Brandon, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on. Good luck this spring. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
When it comes to fungal diseases like soybean white mold and STS, you know how devastating yield loss can be. That's why you work with your seed dealer to find the best genetics for your farm. Did you know you can bring forward the defensive traits of those genetics with a seed treatment? Heads up, a biological plant activator primes your seed to turn on its natural defense against disease. This spring, take your yields to the finish line. Ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of grower success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to Verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's Verify.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on army worms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty along with my brother Darren. We are live in the Morton studio today. We've been talking about spring manure on the show, but we're going to get back to the phone lines and answer a question from Dennis down in Kentucky. Dennis, how are you today?
Doing fine.
Excellent. So I hear you want to talk about Eptam?
I've been growing alfalfa for about 20 years, but okay. I've always planted it with a nurse crop. So we're going to try a spring planting.
Sure.
And I heard you tell a guy the other day that you needed to get it worked in quickly.
Yes.
But I was wanting to find out about how deep does it need to be worked in?
Not super deep, so you don't have to go 6 inches or anything like that. If you get it down 2, 3, 4 inches, whatever, that's fine. Okay. What were you planning to till it in with?
Well, actually, either a light cultipacker or a light disc.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. As long.
Spring tooth cultivator, more than likely.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, yeah, the whole thing I tell guys is you can't just go out there with a drag or something like that. That's not going to do it. You got to get it down into the ground at least a little bit. Eptam has very high vapor pressure, which is nice in a way because even if you don't get rain, it will move around in soil and you still get some decent weed control. Now, in your area, it's not as much of a concern as it is in my area where we go sometimes a month with no rain in the spring. But anyway, yeah, that Eptam is a tremendous product. And if you haven't used it in years or ever on your ground, you're going to go, wow, this stuff is great.
So what kind of rate will we be looking at using?
Okay, the full rate is 4.5 pints. In the past, on our own farm, we have gone 4 pints sometimes, but anymore, we just go 4.5 because that alfalfa crop's worth quite a bit, and we want to make sure we have great weed control. But, you know, we're usually talking somewhere in the 3.5 to 4.5 pint range with the guy, depending on how light the soil is. Do you have light soil, medium soil, heavy soil?
I'd say they're medium to heavy.
Okay. Medium to heavy, I'm probably talking 4 or 4.5 pints.
Okay. And because a lot of the, we used to grow tobacco, and a lot of those chemicals didn't need to be worked in but like an inch.
Yep.
So that's why I'm concerned about how deep you could work it in.
Yeah. So Eptam, just like trifluralin, since they both become a gas like almost right away, you can get them a little bit deeper. You don't have to worry so much about burying an Eptam or a trifluralin because of that vapor pressure that they have. But you're absolutely right. With most herbicides, that's the fear. And for a lot of the manufacturers out there, a lot of agronomists, they get worried that guys are going to work herbicides too deep. I don't worry so much about that, but yes, it could be an issue with a Group 15 product or something else. But nope, Eptam, you don't have to worry about. Get it down in the ground a little bit. Just you want to make sure you cover it. That's the main thing.
And how long is its residual control usually?
It all depends on. So interestingly, with Eptam, there is a soil microbe that will break it down. And the more often you use that chemistry, the more of those soil microbes will be there. So if you haven't used Eptam in many years or ever, it's probably going to last you for a couple months, maybe more. What they found, so this is the same as the old Eradicane. Eradicane was just Eptam plus a corn safener. So back years, decades ago, when we used to work with a lot of people on Eradicane, they were always told, don't use it every single year. You got to go every other year. Well, some guys decided, oh, it works so great, I'm going to use it every year. And then they'd only get residual for a couple weeks, 3 weeks, something like that, because there were so many of those microbes breaking it down in the soil. So anyway, it's a little bit different product that way. But yeah, if literally you only use it once every 5 years, you're going to think it works fantastic.
Okay. I'm looking forward to trying it out.
All right. Sounds good. Let us know here in a couple months, once you get into this alfalfa crop, just let us know how it turns out. I'd like to hear that.
Another quick,
yeah,
temperature.
Yeah.
Does it need to be a...
No.
Does it matter about the temperature?
No. Nope. No concerns.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I would say the only thing that we always worry about whenever you're going to till anything in is just that the ground is dry enough. It doesn't have to be bone dry. We don't want it bone dry, but I'm just saying, obviously, if you didn't seal the ground well, if you were making clods out there, things like that, that could be a problem. That's the only thing I worry about. I'm not worried about temperature at all, though. It'll be just fine, even if it's cold or warm.
Well, like you said, with alfalfa, we try to make everything perfect. It's worth a lot.
All right. Well, good luck, Dennis.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. All right, Darren, what's our next question in the Ag PhD mailbag?
All right, I got this one in from Joel down in Kansas. He said, I attended your Neil Kinsey event this year, and one idea I've got is it would be nice to see several years of soil tests and recommendations followed to see how the soil tests respond and the economics applied to the program. I realize every crop and every part of the country is a little different, but I think this would be pretty neat to see.
It's something we can bring up to Neil because, yes, we are planning to have Neil back last week of February 2025.
All right. Thanks, Joel. We appreciate that. I had this one that came in from Dale. He said, you guys talk about soil sample probes a lot. Who are United States companies with good, solid, constructed tools? I did look this up, Dale, just to see if I could find any other suppliers out there. So I would say this, for anybody who knows of United States suppliers with really good quality soil sample probes, they can sure send that information to us. But two that I see most commonly are Oakfield Apparatus up in Wisconsin and AMS Inc. out in Idaho. So Oakfield Apparatus in Wisconsin and AMS Inc. out in Idaho would be two sources you could get stainless steel probes made here. All right. This one comes in from Curtis. He said, I'm sure you guys have discussed this, but I'm wondering about putting a fungicide on in furrow at planting in corn. I'm looking at using Xyway, but I've heard that it may be related to creating germination issues when put in furrow. I'm not sure which way to go, either the liquid version or the foam system I could put on my planter. I'm out in north central Kansas.
Okay, so we don't typically see germination issues, but here's the thing you got to understand. The triazole chemistries, and there are a lot of fungicides that are triazoles, and they're good at killing a lot of disease. That's great. Triazoles inhibit gibberellic acid production. What does gibberellic acid do in the plant? It makes the plant grow taller. So it basically elongates that stem. So you're going to end up with a little bit shorter plant, potentially, not necessarily, but potentially. And that's what people get a little bit panicked about is they go, oh, my corn's all stunted. Well, it's fine. You just have a little less gibberellic acid in there. We can flip it the other way. You can put Rise Up Smart Grass on, or in other words, gibberellic acid. That's what that product is. And you can make the plant grow taller. So we can make the plant grow taller or shorter. We just haven't been able to figure out how we increase yield with more or less gibberellic acid. But anyway, it'll make the plant grow taller or shorter. I like taller plants for silage. Personally, I like shorter plants for grain corn. But anyway, what we have found is that the foaming system, and I was talking about this a little bit earlier in the show, the foaming system has been better for performance. The reason why is because FMC, at least, is saying they have 50 times better coverage in the furrow when you use the foam as opposed to when you use a normal liquid through a liquid system. So we also have found we're getting a little bit higher yield, a little bit better efficacy, a little less of that stunting that people get worried about. So we believe that is the way to go. That is our number one recommendation. Get the foaming system. And the nice thing with that foaming system, doesn't take a lot of water. You don't use a lot of product. So you can hopefully just fill once a day and you are good to go.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this one from David out in Pennsylvania. He said, hey guys, when I pull soil samples and keep them overnight to mail out the next day, how should I handle them? Should I store them in brown paper bags and then transfer them to Ziploc bags for mailing? Or is it okay to store them overnight in Ziplocs? And if so, should the bags be closed or left open?
See, I always thought that you wanted to send stuff in paper. What I would say is just talk to your lab, and they will provide you with the bags, and they will give you instructions on what they think is best. So I don't know that it makes a lot of difference. With plant tissue, we definitely always say paper bags, not plastic. The reason why is because that plant tissue can turn into manure in a few days in a plastic bag. So I guess just talk to your lab. They'll give you sample bags, and then you're using the right stuff, and then they'll tell you how to mark it up and everything else too.
All right. Thanks for the question, David. We'll take more of your calls and questions throughout the rest of the show at 844-44-AG-PHD or by email radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an AgroLiquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an AgroLiquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Save plenty of green on select John Deere compact utility tractors during the Go Green Save Green event at C&B. Payments start as low as $253 per month. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
From machine storage buildings and farm shops to dependable buildings to house your livestock, regardless of building size or use, Morton has a building for every budget. To learn how we can help you expand your farm operation, visit MortonBuildings.com.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit MyBayerPlus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. We're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD.
All right, next one comes in from Steve, who says, I would like to purchase untreated soybeans and treat them myself. That way I can return unused beans. Is there a dry form of seed treatment available to purchase? Steve, we know of dries for inoculant, for micronutrients, for humix and fulvix. I don't know of dry for fungicide and insecticide. And maybe, I'm just guessing here, maybe the reason why is because we have to be a little bit careful about how much of those things gets on each individual seed, because an overdose of those things is not good. If you overdose something with inoculant, it doesn't make that much difference. It's no big deal. And many of the other biological products that are out there that are dries, I don't care if you overdose, you're not going to have any real big problem. But you overdose on fungicide or insecticide, now that could cause a germination issue. So I'm not aware of any, but you can talk to some of your suppliers. Maybe there's something out there that I don't know of. Now, here's what, because we've worked with farmers for our whole lives. We've farmed our whole lives. And here's what typically people do. They'll get 90 or 95% of their beans treated. They get the last, not only untreated, but in little bags. So that way they have a few extra and those can be returned. Most people now have gone to bulk or bulk bags or bulk boxes or something like that. So, but finishing up with the last few in little bags so they're returnable and untreated, that has been a pretty good way to go for a lot of people. So that's what most of the farmers do that we work with.
All right. Thanks for the question. Got this one from Adam over in Minnesota, and he said, I recently watched your winter workshops, got some good information. I'm a little confused, though, how you present the phosphorus information. If I'm understanding you guys correctly, you believe phosphorus parts per million reflects the actual level of phosphorus in soil. For example, a 20 part per million level
would be 40
pounds in the field.
Yep.
In reality, though, this is just an index value, and that would put, from the lab I use, phosphorus in the very high category. Lots of pounds of phosphorus out in the soil, hundreds if not thousands. So it's just an index that you're seeing. Just curious if I'm misinterpreting this or where our disconnect is
here. Okay, so here's where we differ a little bit. We agree with you 100%. There's all kinds of phosphorus in the soil, and there's a ridiculous amount of potassium in the soil. Trouble is, it's not available. So that's why we have different tests out there. The Olson test and the P1 Bray phosphorus test, they're going to tell you what's available today in the soil. The Malic 3 and the P2 or Strong Bray phosphorus test, they are going to tell you what's available today plus what they believe is going to come available over the course of the next growing season roughly. Now, every lab does things a little bit different. None of this is an exact science. So here's the thing. I'm pretty sure I know which lab you're working with. It's a pretty popular lab in the north, and they do a good job, okay? But when you use the Olson test, number one, your figure is going to be lower because it's just available today, what's available today. And the numbers coming out of that lab always seem to be lower than when we run the same soil in other labs. So in other words, either their extraction method doesn't pull out as much phosphorus, or they're not leaving the extractant together with the soil as long, whatever. Here's the thing. We've been talking about this for 5 years now, that we want you and everyone to pull soil tests based on GPS grid points. And the reason why we would like you to do that is we want you to compare your soil test data to yield. Well, if you do that on a few hundred, and like for us, we do it on a few thousand grid points every year, you're going to see pretty fast what level you need to get to maximize yield and profitability. So in other words, you're going to find out, okay, well, this lab, my lab is saying I only need 20 parts per million. Somebody else's lab might say it's 50 parts per million because they run a completely different test. I don't care really ultimately what the soil test says. I just want to know, do I need more of a certain nutrient or not? Here's the other issue that I've got. If a lab says, well, you only have, and let's run his numbers. You said 20 parts per million of P.
Yep.
Right? Okay. Let's run this math real quick. So 20 times 2 is 40 pounds. And the reason why we get this is in a soil test that's 6 inches deep, that's representative of 2 million pounds. So to convert parts per million to pounds per acre, you just multiply times 2. Pretty simple. So 20 parts per million of P means we have 40 pounds of P. So that's phosphorus. Now, when you buy fertilizer, if you're talking 11-52-0, let's just say, MAP, what is that? 52. It's not P. It is not phosphorus. That is phosphate. Any recommendation you're going to get is going to be in phosphate. Go to the Ag PhD Fertilizer Removal app. It's going to tell you phosphate, not phosphorus. So I apologize that this gets confusing. I don't know why we're still ever talking about straight phosphorus, but on most soil lab's tests, they will show you phosphorus. And then we have to go through this step to convert it over to phosphate. And here's what you do. You multiply it times 2.3. So we're going to take that 8 or that 40 number that we just got, we're going to multiply that times 2.3, and we're going to say, okay, we have 92 pounds of phosphate in the soil. All right, so let's talk about this even further. What we will usually say, if we say, all right, that was an Olson test, and that's available today. We got 92 pounds of phosphate sitting right there, and I'm just going to pull up on the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app real quick. How many pounds do we need if, let's say, we're going to raise 200 bushel corn? Okay, we need 102 pounds. So we're short, obviously. But you got to figure organic matter is going to release a little bit of phosphate. We usually will figure 4 to 7 pounds for every 1%. So let's say it was 4% organic matter soil. That would be a range of roughly 16 to 28 pounds. Okay, so I add 16 on there at a minimum. I figure at a bare minimum, I got 118 pounds of phosphate. All right, now, if my whole soil only has 118 pounds of available phosphate, and I need 102 to raise 200 bushel corn, and I get 200 bushel corn, do we honestly believe that our corn just extracted 85% of all the available phosphate in that soil? There's no possible chance. There's no way. So this is the reason why I don't like the number when it comes out to be that, and I don't like this, well, it's just an index, and this gives you an idea. Because here's the thing. That's not simple. I'm a farmer, and I got enough other things to do. I want to know, how much do I have? How much do I need? And I'll put on the rest, and I'm done. It's pretty simple. Instead of, well, you're in the high category, so you don't need much phosphorus. Well, how much do I need? How much do I really have out there? I don't like it. I don't like it. Personally, I like Malic 3 tests. I think that gives us a much better handle on what's actually in the soil. But again, I'm fine if you want to use this Olson thing and you want to use, well, this is an index and I don't really know what I actually have for phosphorus. I'm guessing, but we're going to call this high. It's all fine as long as you're comparing soil test to yield. And if you're doing that, just like we are in our farm, then you're fine. Because then you can start look again in review. You can start looking at, okay, hey, all my high yields, all I literally had to do was get above whatever, 20 parts per million or 30 parts per million with my lab. Okay. So yes, we're going to talk about the normal way we do things, but there's also this index thing that some labs are going to be talking about. I just think it makes it more confusing.
Yes, but don't get confused. Pull soil samples on your farm. Take a look at them. Use the best information that you've got. It's not absolutely perfect, but nothing is out there. At least you've got a good guideline of what to go on. And then keep track of what your nutrient levels are, what you're doing with your fertility, and see what kind of response you get out in your field. That's the big thing that I see.
See what kind of response you get in the field is challenging because that I don't want to see what I'm getting because you won't see it
most of the time.
You
see it on your
won't. Yes. I'm talking about a lot of times the crop won't show you.
Right.
It's hard to know the difference between
not necessarily
220
show
and 200
you,
bushel corn.
Yeah, what it
but
looks
you
like.
Need to chart it out, and that's where you need GPS points for soil testing. So now we can actually compare and graph it out, and then we have better answers.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening to our program today. Got to talk a little bit about spring manure. If you're making spring manure applications, need a second recommendation, send it in to us, radio@agphd.com. We'd be happy to help. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.